Few measurable. So when you outsource, when you take a service from somebody, it's also important that you measure them. Okay, without measurement, there is nothing. So even if you go for buying a milk, the milkman measures it, right? So similarly, we are talking about IT, we are talking about business. So just few example to quote here is, you know, I may have the measurement as earlier my phishing attempts were say 15%. My 15% employees were getting phished. After having this solution, after having this partner onboarded, my phishing incidents are reduced by 5%. Clear, measurable, right? Similarly, can I have my downtime, which can be reduced by 70%? Earlier, it was managed by my own staff. So if my staff is, you know, ill or something, if he's not available, probably I'm on a, you know, a mercy of God. But having this partner who is responsible to manage my link, can I, you know, increase my uptime, right? Similarly, whatever return of the investment, okay, can I, or am I in a position to achieve 100%, right? And similarly, whatever savings I have mentioned, okay, there are, you know, whenever you outsource, you also document the savings piece, you know, and in the say the approval note or the business note, which goes to senior management. So if I have documented that I'll be, you know, saving 100 million pound, am I doing it actually, right? So all this measurable would go into, you know, the service level agreement before we actually enter into a contract, right? What you should consider, because the partner is partner in our crime, right? I would define that way because they are actually helping us running our business, right? So there has to be a culture of adopt and adapt. So let me quote kind of an example here. If there is a partner or if there's a large telecom who has outsourced their, you know, the mobile network or the voice network to the outsourced party, they also share the penalty. So just to give you an example, okay? So if my DOT mandates or if my Department of Telecom mandates that this has to be there, otherwise there'll be a heavy penalty. So if the partner is missing out on something, I may have a clause in the agreement saying, you know, even if there is a penalty or even if there is an outage, it'll be shared between two, right? My quality management should be factored in. As I said, there is always a scope of improvement. And, you know, is that being happening or monitored as and when we go, okay? And again, last and, you know, foremost important is the required involvement from both the leadership team is there in place right from the beginning to the, you know, ongoing operations. You may have the steering committee meet once in a quarter or you know, or say once in a 6 month, just to have, you know, the kind of engagement that what new can be done, how you know, we can improvise further, and so on and so forth, right? So these are the certain things which you need to take care. Now, as I mentioned some time back, that the ITIL you know, covers the larger gambit of, you know, the IT operations services. If you notice this diagram carefully, it is predominantly divided into three aspects: service design, service transition, and service operations. Let us spend some time here because it's something important, and you know, the ITIL is something you will hear a lot in the industry. In fact, many of you might also think about having the ITIL you know, certified person. There are also certifications available on the ITIL, right? So if you talk about the service transition, you have, you know, the several components, right, from the change management or the knowledge management. We'll be obviously talking about each in detail, but just to give you a gist of it, you know, for the service transition, we have, you know, covered or the factors from the change management. Similarly, from the operation point of view, how am I managing the incident? Okay, how am I managing the service request? All this could be a factor or a part of that particular segment. Again, from the service design point of view, how am I onboarding my supplier? How am I managing my supplier? What are my service level agreement, right? And so on and so forth. So we'll obviously talking about all of them in the great detail. But if you notice this diagram, it is covering the pretty much the entire element of ITL. That's why it is widely adopted as a framework about the service industry, right? So let's talk about a capacity management. What is a capacity management? Today, you are running a server which is supporting, say, 1,000 employees, okay? You grow as an organization and you increase, say, 500 more employees after 6 months. Maybe your infrastructure is capable enough to support those additional 500 onboarded employees. If you have a vertical growth, okay, and if you acquire a company and you have added, say, 5,000 employees, are you in a position to manage them? Okay, obviously, nothing will come as a surprise, right? You obviously have certain roadmap, which will be communicated, and that's where the alignment with the business plays a very important role. So capacity management is nothing but, you monitor your services. You monitor your resources. Your resources could be the CPU utilization of the server, your memory utilization of the server, your link utilization, right? And so on and so forth. So you know for sure that this is being, kind of utilized, and you may define a threshold of 80%. So if you notice on a daily basis, weekly basis, monthly basis that, hey, this specific server is being, continuously being utilized 80%, would like to relook at my, capacity management, right? So the strategy, again, it depends on your own organization. You can define to monitor it and take a call. Some may be having a threshold of 90%. Right, if they really have the cost crunch, right? So similarly, the capacity management is something which is catering your future requirement, and it makes you ready before the incident happens or before the outage happens, right? A very, very important element, guys, and there is a separate team also who continuously monitor the capacity utilization of your organization resources, right? What do you achieve? You are always ready, you are always proactive, right? Before the situation is going to come, you know for sure that you are able to, kind of expand your capacity. It's a continuous process, right? So if you are going on a cloud, it becomes more easy because the scalability becomes a click of a button there. But what the capacity management helps is to give you the holistic approach. So today, you may carry out a change or an expansion in one of the infrastructure component. However, that infrastructure component may be touching your underlying other devices also. Let me give you an example, okay? Suppose you have the core switch installed in your environment, you have the IPS or the intrusion prevention system in your environment, and you have a further firewall or the internet router there, okay? Now, you notice that your IPS, the port which is connecting the core switch is heavily being utilized, and because of which there are performance issues. So you may like to go ahead and kind of increase from say 1 gig capacity of the port to the 10 gig capacity. But remember, there is an underlying switch which is connecting or sending a data. Is that also capable enough to support your IPS upgrade? You may would like to factor in the upgrade of your switch also. So the holistic approach, when we speak, it is about factoring all the components or all the devices, all the applications, wherever there's a dependency there, right? Again, a KPI dashboard monitoring is one of the key element in the capacity management. If my contract demands that in the event of 80% utilization, without asking me, go ahead and upgrade the infrastructure, and then you can probably bill me afterwards. Is that being adhered to? Okay. So after the capacity management, another very important factor is the configuration management. Configuration management, it is, if I want to maintain my operations consistency, okay, or if I want to enhance or keep my product performance, application performance up to the mark, I may would like to factor in certain configuration changes happening in the environment, right? So this is also a separate topic altogether, right, guys? Okay. So whenever I talk about configuration management, there is something called as a CMDB, is also referred very frequently with this topic. Okay. So if I am making a changes in any of the devices, what are the underlying implications, repercussions are going to happen in my environment, right? So configuration management is something which takes care of it. Configuration management also takes care of updating the required document. So if you recollect the example which I had quoted during my last chapter explanation, is if I am upgrading something on my disaster recovery site, is my documentation updated, right? So all those factors can be a part of my configuration management. Now, another sensitive topic is about the vendor management. Vendor is no more a vendor, I repeat, it is actually our partner, right? So if you see, there are several keywords which are kind of highlighted. We'll be talking at length on how to manage the partner for a healthy relationship, right? So let's a deep dive there. Okay, vendor management. Okay, the critical element it is for the entire ecosystem. I cannot repeat more and more again, because they are supporting our business processes, they are supporting our business standards. So it's very important for them to understand and walk with us during this journey. Okay, so there are so there is actually a life cycle when you onboard any partner or any vendor. Okay, the lifestyle includes right from the birth to the the kind of retirement or exiting from the contract. There are few key points, like scoping is one of the key element of the vendor life cycle. Once you agreed with the deliverables, you enter into a formal contract, right? You start your operations, you keep on changing, etc., and so on and so forth. Okay, so let's talk about the life cycle of the vendor, right? So if you see this diagram very, very carefully, and again, one of the very important topic, guys, scoping. Step number one, scoping is something which you do, wherein you determine your need. So whenever you as an organization wants to onboard your services to an external partner, you first need to be clear what you want. Many a time I've seen that if the processes and if the people are not matured enough, they are themselves not clear on what they want, right? So that's something, scoping, it's very, very important, because trust me, guys, vendor can take you for a ride. Okay, if you are yourself not a clear on the topic, right, or on your requirement. So once you do that, you also evaluate the past contracts in case if you are not clear on what you want. Similarly, once you do that, you also define, you put it on a paper on what are the agreements you want to enter into, or what are the clauses you want to enter into a contract whenever you are going, right? Again, the third important aspect is about implementation of service or a product purchasing procedure. So you have the bid tabulation, you have something as a negotiation with the partner, and so on and so forth as a part of the process. So some of you might have worked on the technical evaluation of a scorecard, or the commercial evaluation of the scorecard, which goes to the procurement team, who comes on the table, negotiates with them. So it's also part of the process while you are onboarding the partner. Okay, once everything is done, you literally onboard. Now this onboard could be a greenfield, wherein you are starting from scratch, and you do not have any baggage from the past provider. Okay, you ask your partner to create everything from afresh, right? Otherwise, there also be a flavor wherein you are changing your partner from one hand to another hand, right? Again, there are service transitioning piece also, which we'll be talking towards the end of this chapter. Once the partner is onboarded, what you do is you perform the monitoring, okay? Because it is again a very, very important, your job is not done yet. Once the partner is there, initially probably there'll be hiccup and there may be performance issues, but that can always be agreed upon. And after the buffer period or a cold period, you can start monitoring the performance of it. And if you are happy, if you are not happy, if you're changing your business need, and if you end the contract, right, of course there is a defined process wherein you want to transition from one partner to another partner, you want to stop completely the services because you are out of that the process, or you're out of the business altogether. So, or depending on all that, you also formalize the process of vendor exiting. Right, whenever you are onboarding the partner, there are certain key consideration you must have. Few of that, I would repeat what I said. Okay, the adequate due diligence. Okay, so whenever you are onboarding a partner, you also take a customer reference check. Okay, you want to be absolutely sure that the other customer of this partner is happy enough, or there was a mistake which they also made, and they kind of now facing it. Right, also. The vendor deliverables is one of the very important element, because they may play around with certain terms, certain conditions, which you would like to clarify if you are not clear. Okay, also you would also like to put in or put forth your point of view, your requirement in the agreement. There may be a standard agreement, there may be a, you know, the standard deliverables offered by a partner, but you have your own customized need. You may would like to push back to the partner saying, no, I want it, so I would like to, you know, kind of having it included this into the contract. Okay, and finally, the documentation is also very, very important. Many of organizations I've seen, they get everything documented from the partner. The beauty is, since they are expert in that, since they are they know-how of the, say, the services which they are managing, you get a very good quality of the documentation. Again, telling them to document is not the job done. You also need to review them. Okay. One of the important line which is mentioned is, it is also important that there is a healthy relationship between the partner and the customer is maintained. Okay. This engagement fails. You will see many examples, this engagement being failing. But since you have a lock-in period for 3 years, you don't have choice, and you keep on penalizing the partner, and it's really not a good sign of healthy relationship between partner and a vendor, and a customer. I'm sorry. So the expectation needs to be clear from the day one, from the date of engagement, from the date of onboarding, right? So that there is a healthy relationship maintained, and there is no problem going forward. Knowledge management, a very, very, very important piece. I have seen organization wherein there are call which are taken overnight to retrench, you know, the employees. Okay, wherein there were few employees who are there associated with the organization since last 20 years, and they are asked to leave, right? And they are holding all the knowledge in their mind. Okay, nothing is documented. So whenever there is a new person who is onboarded, obviously there is no information there documented, so the newly onboarded person have a, you know, kind of a tough time to manage the operations or to manage the show, right? So the knowledge management piece is something very, very important. This also holds true with the partner engagement. Okay, if you are heavily dependent on the partner, you would like to ensure that whatever the cases, whatever the issues are being reported, are they being covered or documented as a part of knowledge management, right? You may have created a frequently asked questions kind of stuff, wherein as and when the new issue comes up, props up, it is resolved on the priority. However, it is documented and captured so that if it happens again, you have at least some document to refer to. Okay, knowledge management or KM also makes your life easy. Because of the obvious reason I just called out some time back, right? The knowledge management would also be playing a very, very critical role when you are changing your partner. Okay, the changing the partner sometimes is very, very tedious, because the lack of documentation or the lack of standardization, even if the documentations are created, are they in a great detail? Okay, that needs to be understood, that needs to be ensured. Okay, so moving on to the service operations now, from the ITIL standpoint, there are certain key elements, those of you who may not be aware, but these are some very, very important, the keywords or the categories which runs the operations. Okay, we'll talk about all of them in some time, but incident management, change management, and problem management is something, which helps or which is the core of your ITIL library, which contributes a lot in a customer satisfaction, right? What is incident? Okay, now incident is something I would define that as any unexpected disruption in the service. Okay, so suppose if I'm using my ERP system, and if there is an outage and I'm not able to use that the ERP system for carrying out my transaction. Many of you might have witnessed that whenever you are going for the ticket booking of the railway, probably the server is down. Or if you are going to any bank, they are not able to, deposit or take a deposit because their system is down. That could be referred as an incident. There could be a several reason of the incident. A few of the examples are given, like if your WAN link has failed. So you have, suppose, only one link which is helping you connect between your branch site and your server. If that fails, that could be treated as an incident. If there is a server hardware which is failed, maybe your drive is failed, maybe your CPU is failed, that could be treated as an incident. again, there may be an underlying switch which is failed, or your access point is failed, that could also be treated as an incident. Okay, so thing for you to understand is the incident is something which stops the usual business operation. Okay, there is also a category of security incident, wherein if you have any security related incident, say for example, if you have a phishing, and you know, or if you have a compromise of the user ID and password of an employee, which caused the email shot to 5,000 plus of your employee, internal and you know, kind of external, that could be treated as a security incident, right? So we'll talk about the security when we reach the chapter of the security. But right now, understand that the incident is something which is causing a disruption into my regular operations. Okay. Now, incident can also be defined in the categories. Okay. Everything cannot be a very high or severity one incident. Okay. So what I would probably do is I will probably categorize. Okay. How do I categorize? Some categorize low, medium, critical, high. Some categorize as a low, medium, high. All depending on the definition of your organization thought process. Okay. So low severity incident something is that you know you have a minimal impact. Maybe a single user is impacted, probably. Okay. That could be a very good example of your low severity incident. If you talk about the medium or a severity two level of you know kind of incident, that could be treated as or you know the example could be the segment of a user or a segment of a region is kind of affected. So maybe if you have the failure in or say for example if you have this a fiber cut because of the nationally say the national highways construction, if you have a the fiber cut, okay, you may have the outage for that region, right, for that province or for that state or something, that could be treated as a the medium incident. You may also have the entire floor which is outage, which is you know kind of cut off from the network because of the switch failure. That could also be a moderate or a medium incident, a severity 2 incident. High is something where you know your business is completely stopped. You have a widespread impact. Probably your core router has failed, your core you know firewall is failed, and so on and so forth. Or maybe you are affected with ransomware or something. That could be treated as a high severity incident. Change is something which is only constant, you might have all heard, right? So change is something again holds a big importance to run my operations smooth in my environment. Why? Because any change, if it is not assessed well, if it is not approved by the required person, you know, I may have some surprises, and senior management don't like surprises, you know, and you all of us know. So the change is something wherein you know anything you are changing, any modification either in application, in the infrastructure, which could be change in the switch, server, whatsoever is changing, you categorize that as a change. Now, depending on the modesty of your organization, you decide that what could be or what change could go under a approval process. There are certain changes which can go off, you know, go as a standard changes, which may not need an approval. So say for example, you have the patching process, right? So you may have the monthly patching process on the test environment. You know it's a test environment, right? Which is a kind of standard change. And it need not to be discussed more. You know for sure that, you know, whatever in case, if even if the change fails, only the set of servers are going to be impacted, right? So that can be treated as a standard change. But you as an organization needs to decide what is a standard change, what is a moderate change, and so on and so forth. So we'll talk about the change categories also in just a bit. But now to know for you to know is, you know, the reason of having a change management process is simple, that you know that what is coming, you know that what is going to be impacted, and you know that the people, associated people are also informed, and they have approved the change, right? So as I was explaining the standard change, or that can also be categorized as a medium change. Example I gave you about having the test servers patched, very much an example of a standard change. Or probably you can have another example of having the switch iOS upgraded, right? That could also be a standard change, because you know that there is a redundant switch which will take care of my load. then I'll not have any kind of impact. What could be a normal change? So again guys, this definitions depend on organization to organization. There are no hardwire definitions, but whatever is the mindset, thought process of the change of your organization, you can, you know, document, categorize the change accordingly, right? So there are certain changes, pre-approved one, few people call it as a standard, few people call it as a normal change. Again, as I said, the thought process of your change management practices of your organization. Emergency change. Again, a very important element or a keyword when I say emergency change. So remember that emergency changes are generally not appreciated, okay? Emergency changes can only be raised to have a break fix, okay? One more important thing for you to understand is in emergency change, you have the approval or the formalized approval process later on, okay? You first go ahead and take a verbal approval and you carry out the change because it's a break fix, okay? And then you probably can regularize it. But from the auditor point of view, from the organization standpoint, it is good to have the minimum number of emergency changes. Why? Because if you have the more number of emergency changes, your effectiveness or your maturity of an organization as a whole is questioned. Okay, it should be minimized because you know for sure that this is going to come, and there should not be any firefighting situation, and there should not be much of the, you know, emergency changes raised in the organization. Okay, problem management. What could be defined as a problem? So let me give you an example. I have the, you know, the radio frequency setup between my two plants. Okay, I have a two plants which are very nearby to each location, maybe 500 meters away, and there is a railway line which is passing by. Okay, now I have about a 21 meter tower, and you know, this RF antennas are placed. Everything is okay. I have started facing the outage in that RF link. Okay, so maybe the outage happened once. I raised a ticket, or I raised an incident which we just discussed, and I fixed it. Again, after a few days, after a few weeks, I again had an incident of the similar nature. What was fixed? Maybe the RF antenna was fixed, or what happened? Nobody could find out what was the problem, right? But if it is keep on happening, okay, so probably now the frequency has been increased. You have noticed that these incidents are happening, five times in a month, and that too on a specific time, okay? And I'm quoting this as a real example, guys. What had happened, between two plants, there was an outage happening in this RF circuit only between 1:30 to 2:30. After 2:30, the link used to be restored automatically. When it was investigated, when it was further drilled down, we came to know that, you know, the Indian Railways has changed the locomotive or, you know, the engine from diesel to the electric one. And because they change, the electric one, and because the train is passing by in this specific time, I am facing an interference in the circuit, and that's why I am facing an outage, right? So this is recorded as a problem, and I would like to have a permanent fix. I cannot live with it. I cannot have outage between 1:30 to 2:30 every day. So as a problem management, what I will do, I will document it, and I will have, you know, some steps defined. So maybe what I will do, I will change my frequency of my RF antenna, or I will increase my height of my tower so that the interference can be minimized, and so on and so forth, right? So every problem is raised when there is a repetitive incident happening with the same reason. Okay, it's a very, very important definition, friends. You must need to understand this, right? A few examples are quoted here apart from what I have quoted is your server is going into the hung state while processing the specific execution of the process. You understood that there is a CPU is being utilized and because of which it's happening. Okay, I will create a change. I'll create a problem ticket, and I have a permanent fix. The another example is given is my WAN link is failing because my device present at my tower is being increasing the temperature. What I'll probably I found out that there was AC supporting that base station was malfunctioning. It was not working, and that's why it was causing this issue. So clear it to all of you that the problem management is something, or the problem ticket is something which is created as a ticket whenever there is an outage happening for the same reason. Okay, few of the problem management characteristics which we have briefly spoke about already. Now the last element is about the service request. What is the service request? Imagine you are not able to function because your touchpad on your laptop is not working. Okay, maybe the drivers are corrupted or maybe whatever is the reason, and you want a wireless mouse. You'll obviously raise some kind of ticket. Okay, now this ticket is an example of your service request. So technically, any end user who is raising the ticket is referred as a service request or a service ticket. Maybe you want to get the printer installed, or maybe you want to fix your display drivers, and so on and so forth. The examples could be many. So all those can be factored into a part of your service request. The service request is generally what one should understand is your non-IT folks are raising a service request always, right? So the problem statement may be very vague in nature. So it is a job of the behind the person who is working on the service tickets is to interpret the problem in a way this is a problem and what could be the fix. Just to give you an example, okay? So during my initial days of career, I used to also work with one of the international call center, okay, the technical call center. Now we used to fix the problem of the end user, and the users were predominantly from US. I received a call one day saying I'm not able to print, my printer is not working. I said okay, and then when we asked the open-ended question, finally we came to know that there were no papers in the printer. Obviously it will not print, right? Another example, I asked the user after the troubleshooting, I asked user to reboot or restart the machine. Okay, within a fraction of 3 seconds, 5 seconds, he said my machine is restarted. I was wondering that what he did. Then I asked him that how you restarted your computer. So he said there is a switch in the screen, I just pressed it twice, it went off and it came in again. What he did, he just restarted his monitor and not the computer, right? This happens. And since they are a non-technical and non-IT people, it is a job of the person who is working on a ticket to interpret the problem and provide a resolution, right? This tickets also needs to be reviewed on a periodic basis, because remember, it is going to be affecting your customer CSAT, right? Or the customer increased index of the happiness, right? So this also needs to be reviewed. So like how you review incident, similarly you may would like to review your service request also, and you may have the several review mechanism. You may would like to take a feedback based on the per ticket, you may would like to give a random call, and so on and so forth, right? So before we end, just simple thing is what could be the example of the service request. If you notice, the request for the service delivery action is something, these are the examples which are quoted, that somebody is asking for setting up the account in probably Salesforce. Okay, that could be very much a part of the service request. Okay, your service request could also be like giving them access to a knowledge base or the frequently asked question so that he can fix it himself, right? And also examples of having the printer configured and so on and so forth, all these would be a part of your service request. So with this we end this chapter. So what we learned what is the service request, what is the incident, what are the risks of outsourcing, what is outsourcing at the first place, what are the success measures of the outsourcing, what are the ITIL processes, what are the incident, what are the service requests, what is the change management. Everything we learned, we discussed in this chapter. Thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate your time. Take care of yourself. Thank you so much again.